Blog Talk Radio.
Radio. I am your host, Letitia Dorsey Magaha, certified life coach, and I welcome you to my show tonight. It is Wednesday, April the 10th. It is 9:03, and we are live. I'm so glad you decided to join us. I have calls coming in, people on the line. We're really excited about tonight. If you are listening tonight and you want to join in on the conversation, give us a call at 516-453-9110. That's 516-453-9110. Press the 1 button to raise your hand to join in on and be live on air. If you are calling from a T-Mobile phone, give us a call at 971-379-93537. You can also join us in the chat at blogtalkradio.com, The Hilltop Radio Show. Again, thank you so much for joining us tonight. So tonight's topic I'm super excited about because it's a topic that we need to talk about more and more and more and more. It is mental health. I am not a therapist, but I am a certified life coach. And if you maybe you want to dip your feet in the mental health pool, but you might not be ready for therapy or you don't feel like you're ready for therapy, reach out to me. You can reach out to me at BecomingExcellentB.com. That's BecomingExcellent, B as in boy, E as in excellent.com. That is my website. Or you can reach out to me on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. I have 15 minutes of free discussion with you to see if consulting is for you. All right, so it is April. Let me introduce my co-host, Antonio Magaha. Are you on the line?
Good evening. I am.
How are you?
Good evening. Good evening. I'm doing well. Doing well. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. So how's your week been?
The week has been great. Just a little tired. But other than that, all is well. I have no complaints. No complaints.
Did you go out and look at the eclipse?
I did not. Some of the kids in school, I think, you know, they were provided the glasses to do so, but I did not. I was in the room actually doing, taking care of some work, handling some business, so I didn't get a chance to.
Okay. I didn't go look at it either. I kind of used it. Well, I was kind of reverent. Yeah, I was a little, I was reverent at that hour and just kind of really grateful of where I've been and excited about where I am going.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So, it's April. It is still the top of the year, but we're now into the second quarter. Still plenty of time, though, to get a lot, get some stuff accomplished. But it's, you know, before we know it, it'll be middle of the year, and then third quarter, fourth quarter, and we'll be looking at 2025. I'm not trying to rush it, but that's kind of how it goes.
Right.
All right, so tonight's guest, I actually met him at my school. His name is Chris James. He is a certified mental health first aid instructor, anger management specialist, public speaker, four times author. He is the director and founder of the organization Creative Connections. He provides instructional training to students and professionals across America to address arts education, social-emotional learning, and mental wellness. Antonio, you familiar with social-emotional learning, SEL? That's a buzzword.
Very much so.
Buzzword in the educational community.
Right.
He has a program called Black Boys Better. And he provides mental health education for Black boys across Georgia, facilitated by Black men mental health professionals. He serves as the newly appointed chairman of the Health and Wellness Committee for the Atlanta Black Chamber. Chris James designs unique programs to address mental health crisis responsiveness, culture responsive teaching, and social engagement. He is also proud 2016 and 2023 TED Talk alumni. Chris James is most famously recognized as a nationally award-winning spoken word artist who ranked second place in the world's second largest poetry competition. In 2019, he was invited to be the keynote speaker at the United States Capitol for Congress. He uses many talents to accomplish a very specific mission, which is to serve people. That is his mission statement. He likes to serve people. What I have found, just as a quick, for Georgia, Atlanta has the third highest rise in mental health issues. Third. with an increase.
Wow.
It has increased from 22 to 23 and probably increased even more from there. In 2023, the average percentage of adults with mental health issues in Georgia was almost 30%, which 30% with mental health issues.
Wow.
And it was in 2021, it was reported that over 4 million people in Georgia lived in communities that did not have enough access to mental health care. So those are some alarming numbers. But we want to welcome right now, want to welcome Mr. Chris James to the show.
Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me. Oh, okay. Hand clap. Okay, hey, it's official.
It's
the audience is here.
The audience
like
is here.
I'm on TV with Oprah and Montel Williams. Y'all better show out.
Hey, listen, you better speak into my manifestation. That's all I can say about that. You better speak into my manifestation. Come on now. Mr. James.
Absolutely.
It's a pleasure to have you on this evening. I'm so glad that you had time in your schedule to accommodate the Becoming Excellent B Radio show tonight.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Thank y'all for having me.
Tell us a little bit about yourself before we get into the meat of mental health and what you do.
I mean, you said it all in your intro, but I will say, I pride myself on, again, serving as a mental health practitioner, primarily for Black boys and Black men. I speak about, the importance and the value in healing as Black men. I always tell folks, man, like, we can, so many of us focus on generational wealth, but we don't understand that the etymology of the word wealth actually means health and well-being, which has very little to do with financial wealth, right? So I really want to really push and encourage Black folks, especially to get on this journey with us to generationally heal. And so if we can pass that to our children and to our family, that'll be the best thing we can do for them. And that's what I'm super, super passionate about, Black folks healing. I'm excited to be here. I'm sure I'll be able to tell even more about my story and my healing journey as we had this conversation. So, yeah.
So, with mental health, are you originally from Georgia, or where are you? Where do you originate from?
I'm from Little Rock, Arkansas.
Okay. Okay. What's the mental health statistics there, or how long have you been here? Do you know?
I don't know what they are, but what I will say is that, again, we suffering everywhere. I mean, that's how I look at it. Yeah. So I don't know.
So what got you into being interested in mental health for people, for others?
So what I've learned, whenever I meet any mental health practitioner, what I've learned is that every single one of us who serve as a mental health practitioner had our own hero story as it relates to mental health, right? We somehow had a relationship with a mental health struggle, and we somehow were pulled out of that dark space. And because we were pulled out of that dark space, we said, you know what? I want to spend the rest of my life serving others to help them get out of that dark space. And actually, I'll tell a story. It's a quick story. A fable, right? Whatever. I'm going to tell it anyway. All right. So, boom. There's this crackhead, right, that has fell in this deep, dark hole in the middle of the woods, right? And so he's in this hole, and he's, like, screaming to everybody, like, hey, help me out, please. Somebody help me out of this hole. Help me out of this hole. I'm stuck. So this pastor walks by in the forest. And so the crackhead sees the pastor. He's like, pastor, help me out of this hole, man. I done fell in this hole. I don't know how to get out. The pastor's like, all right, I'll help you. The pastor puts his hands together, closes his eyes, looks to the sky as he's on his knees. He prays to God to help this man out, this crackhead out of the hole, and he sends the prayer down to the bottom of the hole. The crackhead grabbed the prayer. He's like, man, what I'm gonna do with this? I'm gonna get it out the hole. He throw the prayer to the side. I don't want this. Look, I can't do nothing with it. The next person walking through the forest is a doctor, and the crackhead is like, doctor, help me out of this hole. The doctor writes him a prescription, throws it down to the bottom of the dark hole with the crackhead. The crackhead grabs the prescription, says, man, I can't do nothing with this hole, this prescription, so he tears it up, throws it away. Boom. The third person walking through the forest is a recovered crackhead. The crackhead yells, he's like, recover crackhead, help me out of this hole. The recovered crackhead says, all right, I got you. The recovered crackhead jumps into the hole with the crackhead. The crackhead looks at the recovered crackhead and is like, yo, you fool. Now we both stuck in this hole. The recovered crackhead looks at the crackhead and says to him, I've been here before. I know how to get out. And that's the story I like to tell because, again, as it relates to my hero story, as it relates to why I became a mental health practitioner. Again, I went from this world-renowned spoken word artist and award-winning playwright who traveled the country as this rock star performer, right, and writer, and I said, I can serve people in a deeper capacity in this way. So I decided, hey, you know, I survived my suicide desires. I survived my grief. I survived my depression, right? And now I want to help other folks who look like me do the same thing. And that's where I am. I'm helping folks get out this dark hole because I've been there before.
That was a great story. And I totally agree with it. I mean, I can totally identify with that. People who serve other people generally are coming from a place of, like you said, having needed to be served at one point, and now here they are. I'm just going to say what is interesting, though, in my own healing journey, I've realized that although I've served and I've loved to serve others, I have been on two sides of that fence. One side was serving others and wanting to help others, but really looking to rescue myself. And the more healing that I have done, now I'm on the other side of that fence where I want to help others, but I'm not trying to rescue myself. I've rescued myself, per se. I know the triggers. I know where I am. And so I'm not looking to rescue myself and other people. I'm just looking to pull them up because I know you can't. I've been there, and I know that you can, you know, it can be okay. You can be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with that kind of do you understand what I'm saying?
I think so. So when I heard that, what came up for me, And it could not be what I'm exactly hearing from your story, what you're attempting to articulate, but when I hear what you're saying, what comes up for me is, people who who do everything to help everybody else, to keep them so occupied that they avoid their own actual healing process.
Mm-hmm.
And then when nobody mm-hmm. else needs help, now they're stuck to listen to the voices of their own trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something, you know, a lot of people do. You know, a lot of people find themselves, like, you know, drowning in everybody else's issues
mm-hmm.
when they've not completely done the work to address their own. So again, mm-hmm. when I was hearing that, that's what was coming up for me. Again, I'm not saying that's your narrative, but when I hear what you explain, that's what comes up for me. And a lot of people do that because it's mm-hmm. easier, you know, to address other folks' stuff than it is your own. Because, you know, mm-hmm. like addressing your own, it's heavy. It's uncomfortable. You know, mm-hmm. it don't feel good. And none of us, you know, like not feeling good. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's what comes up for me.
Yeah, you know, what
was it? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. Go ahead.
I was going to ask him, what was the, I know he mentioned his actual transition from being a poet to, you know, working the mental health. What was the definitive moment that you said, you know what, I know this is it. I know I'm heading in this, and I'm going in this direction. This is the right direction. And then when you made that decision or that transition, like, did you catch a lot of flack from naysayers and people who were, you know, felt like you should keep doing what you were doing or felt like you were making the wrong decision when you made that transition?
I would say no. Okay. But what I will say is that it came from me, though. You know,
gotcha.
The imposter syndrome is like mm-hmm. yo, you can't do mm-hmm. this. Like, you ain't supposed to be
wow.
doing this. You didn't
wow.
go to school for 8 years to be a clinician, you know, to be a traditional therapist, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but so I did the work to go to other routes. You know, I went the route to become a certified anger management specialist through the state of Georgia. I went the route of becoming a national instructor through the National Council of Mental Wellbeing. You know, so mm-hmm. I went all the other routes to become certified as a mental health practitioner, and I found myself in spaces where certain people looked at me and said, "Man, how are you a practitioner?" I'm like, "Well, I mean, look up the definition of practitioner:
wow.
somebody who practices
right.
a thing, right? Like, if I design shoes every day of my life for however long, I could identify as a shoe design practitioner."
Right.
I mean, you know, so mm-hmm. so yeah, so I think the pushback or the whatever type of criticism, it was more so with myself, you know, mm-hmm. like, man, are you sure you want to call yourself this? Are you sure you want to show up in spaces mm-hmm. like this? But what I've
wow.
noticed over the years
wow.
is that I myself have done the work so much that,
mm-hmm.
you know, these individuals are inviting me to the spaces to advise them. You know,
mm.
so literally I've had clients who are doctors, who are mental
mm-hmm.
health practitioners, you know, the traditional way. I've been invited to college, university to speak to all the graduating students in the psychology program. You know,
mm.
and paid $6,000 for an hour of my time on a virtual call, right?
Mm.
Because I've been doing the work. And the work has been
right,
appreciated.
Right.
So now, I've done the work to quiet those voices, those intrusive thoughts, because I've proven it to my own self.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I can concur with the imposter syndrome, because, like you said, when you don't have, you're not Dr. So-and-so. You know, I have a degree in psychology, but I'm not a therapist, but after you do the internal work, after you do, not after, because there's, I mean, we're always doing the work, but when you've come so much on your healing journey, I had a client today, I told him, I said, because I've been in the spaces, the mental health spaces, like a cutter as a teenager or a young person, suicidal ideation, I mean, I thought that was just a part of my mind. I didn't even know there was space outside of every time something goes wrong, thinking like, man, it would be just so much better if I wasn't here. All kind of abuse and emotional, mental health, all kind of stuff. And to be in space where you're clear, I told my client, I said, it puts weight to your words. It's not just theory. I'm telling you, I'm not telling you what I think. I'm telling you what I know, what I've lived, you know. And so there's a weight that comes that, what in the church they call it the anointing, but it's true. And I've seen you come into my school in 1 week as a stranger, and the group of kids in the program that you are, and we're going to talk about that, Black Boys Better. I've seen them open up to you in a day where people who are in their life day in and day out, they would not tell two words to. But you came in a week and opened those eyes up.
Absolutely. And that's always a beautiful experience. So I wrote a book called Get Up, Get Out, and Get Some Healing. The title was inspired by, you know, song by Goody Mob, Outkast, Get Up, Get Out, and Get Something. But in that book, I wrote about, you know, it's a book about mental health and mental illness and how to begin and get through the healing process. But I always tell people, like, I talk about mental health in a way that even a sixth grader can hear it and it's digestible, right? Which is why I'm able to impact them in such a way. You know, I'm at Stockbridge High School this week. You know, and when I tell you, oh my God, like, I mean, these high schoolers, man, when I tell you they have been so emotionally naked and vulnerable with me, and now just 3 days, it's insane. It's unbelievable, you know, how much they want to share. But what I've learned, through my work, is that especially Black boys and Black men, they are yearning for the opportunity to say the simple sentence that begins with, I feel. Because the world has not given Black boys and Black men permission to feel out loud. Again, we have not been given the permission to feel out loud. And when I come to these spaces and I tell these Black boys, you know, look around, it's just us in here. Hey, I've been through this. Hey, I survived this. They rush to say, me too, let me tell my story. Let me tell mine. Right? Like today I talked about, you know, my grief. Like my mother died, you know, and this young boy, he got 1989 tattooed under his eyelid, under his eye.
Wow.
And then something else on the other side. I mean, a 10th grade. And he came to me and he was like, man, you know, my mom died like in 2021, man. And you know, I just be crashing out. And I was like, what that mean? He's like, man, you just walk up to random folks in the hallway and fight for no reason. Like, I just crashed out a lot, man. But again, he's never said that to anybody or never processed his grief. He just started, you know, reacting instead of, you know, doing the work to experience that grief in a healthy way. But again, I really pride myself on being able to, you know, touch these young boys and just touch the people that I touch in the community too, you know, but just, again, in a real way, in a relatable way. So, yeah, that's what I do. That's who I am.
That's such a responsibility. Having young people trust you And like you said, you just have been over at the high school for 3 days. To
yeah.
trust you, it's such a gift to be able to fast track, like I say, fast track into people's hearts. And it's such a responsibility, especially with young people, because there's so much abuse of people's vulnerabilities that it's hard to trust people. But to be able to fast track into a kid's heart, that's such
right.
a gift. It's such a gift. All
yeah.
right, if you are calling in, 516-453-9110, let me take, I see a hand up. Let me take this call. Caller 470-773, you had your hand up. Would you like to ask a question or say something tonight?
Hi.
Hello.
I just wanted to say you're doing amazing.
Okay. Thank you, caller.
Hi, Ms. Dorsey.
Hi. So we have listeners from school. So they I appreciate that. Thank you for listening. Thank you for spending your time. I hope that you hear something that you can take away. In the school environment, it's so delicate. And what is interesting to me is the expectation, and I know Antonio could attest to this because we talk about it all the time, the expectation that these students come to learn, but they have so much stuff that gets in it, that comes before that, and it seems to be no, like, I mean, I know that the school can't just stop because you have a crisis, but we're all in crisis now, you know, it seems like. And how do they expect learning to happen when there's so many crises?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, this is true. This is true. And I think the response to that should be, so. And I'll say this. So, yes, when you say we're all in crisis, I agree with that, right? Even those who are not out loud experiencing what you might identify as traumatic, right?
Mm-hmm.
But again, what we got to understand is that you got primary trauma, which is what we ourselves experience. And then you got that
mm-hmm.
secondary trauma, which is just as impactful. It's just like secondhand smoke, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's something we don't talk about. Like, for example, there may be women right now who had a good daddy all their lives or who have had healthy relationships with men all their lives, but if they surround themselves with three women who have never had healthy relationships with their father or with men, right, they will, the woman who has had healthy relationships with men will find herself repeating the same rhetoric that those women who have not
Ooh.
Are repeating, right? And now she's repeating, and now here she is, repeating that same type of toxicity out loud in her interactions with men. And now she looks up and wonder why she ain't got a man 10 years later, because she's repeating or allowing herself to be a victim of that secondary trauma. Like, sis, that ain't even your trauma, right? So to that point, again, like, we've seen children, students, right? Like, even our own peers when we grew up, right, who had the perfect lives, but they found themselves getting in the streets, right? Why did they get in the streets? Because they found that secondary trauma attractive and exotic or whatever else, right? Like, which is why we see these, well, we like, man, you ain't even about to, you will see a student who try to act hard and try to do things that they normally don't do. And we say, man, that ain't who you are. You weren't like that in sixth grade or seventh grade. Why are you acting like that now in eighth grade? Right? It's because they are becoming victims of that secondary trauma. They're putting they've allowed it to land on them. Right? So what I think we got to do is we got to teach these young people Number one, how to not allow other people's trauma to land on them. Number two, mm-hmm. we got to teach these young people how to deal with uncomfortable emotions, right? Because they're mm-hmm. going to continuously deal with uncomfortable emotions. The other day when I was at Stockbridge Middle, again, a young man shared with us that one of his biggest emotional disappointments was when he was in fifth grade. Keep in mind, this boy in seventh grade. He said, in fifth grade, his girlfriend broke up with him. I said, have you ever talked to anybody about it? He said, no, because I didn't think nobody would listen. So I bring it up to say, again, that rejection, that heartbreak that he dealt with, that he experienced in the fifth grade, it was real to him.
Oh, yes.
Nobody taught him how to deal with it.
I am a strong advocate for listening to young people and where they are and not dismissing their, like, where they are. If they're in a relationship and they love somebody, I as an adult, we know all of the hills and valleys and all of the things that come with that. But where they are, that's what they mm-hmm. if they love, that's where they're at. And I think it's very disrespectful. Right. It's extremely disrespectful to brush them off as if, that's just puppy love, or that's just this, or you just that. And diminishing, we do a lot of diminishing young people's feelings and where they are.
Yeah.
And so, and then they come out like, Antonio, what happened? You said some young student at your...
Yeah, it was a young gentleman at over the spring break. His girlfriend, he's an eighth grader. I guess she was telling him she was going to break up with him, and he told her, if you break up with me, I'm going to kill you. And he managed to find himself. He and another guy came to her house, and they shot over the house a couple of times. Luckily, they didn't shoot into the house, and, you know, no one got killed. But, you know, that emotional, you know, that situation was so distraught for him that, his attempt obviously was, you know, I'm going to try to do something to this girl for Brady. And then this is an eighth grader. He's an eighth grader. So, yeah, they definitely have a lot to deal with. I wanted to ask you, Chris, I know you deal with a lot of you deal with young men in terms of their vulnerability and them sharing. I'm quite sure you're very empathic. What's your means of self-care and what's the word I'm looking for? Because I know for myself, you know, I work with young men as well, and I'm very empathic, and there can be a tendency for me from time to come home, and I could still be thinking about a conversation I had with a young man and the stuff that he shared with me that was very distraught, very disturbing, traumatic, and I'm still carrying that, you know, hours later, which can, you know, mm-hmm. definitely dampen my mood and kind of put me in a very bad state. So how do you effectively, like, when you have these conversations and you have these interactions and engagement, like, how do you, like, most effectively deal with that after the fact? Where it doesn't, you know, put you in those spaces.
Yeah, I spoke at a conference called Don't Forget the Me in Mental Health. So I did a whole, you know, hour-long presentation about how to do that, why not to, you know, the entire process of that. But for me, I self-care every day. Right, and I always tell people, you know, again, keep in mind what self-care is. It's very simple. All it means is taking care of yourself. What do you intentionally do for yourself every day? So for me, mm-hmm. I literally do something for myself every day. Like when mm-hmm. I leave out of these classrooms, mm-hmm. there are eight levels of self-care, right? And again, this is in my book, Get Up, Get Out of Here, Some Healing. I need to go grab one somewhere so I can read this to y'all, but it's eight levels of self-care. But one of the levels of self-care, it talks about space self-care. right? You know, cleaning your, having a clean space, right? Like for example, if your car is messy or your bedroom or your house is messy, that's a sign that you're not in the best space mentally and emotionally and spiritually, and all those things, right? So, so one of the things about space self-care is having a sacred space. So literally, every time I leave a school, I leave a session where I just spoke to 150 students and 20 of them stood in line afterwards to ask me one more question that's heavy. My sacred space is sitting in my truck. When I tell y'all, I do so much unloading, letting back, relaxing in my truck, and immediately unplug from those, from all the, again, that secondary trauma, right? Because I'll say this, what is trauma? Trauma is an experience that becomes disturbing and distressful, right? Mm-hmm. So, again, everything that happens that's major doesn't have to become traumatic if you do the work to not allow it to disturb you or to cause you stress, right? Don't go to the worst place possible, right? You don't have to go there. So for me, right, I do every time I make sure that I don't allow it to trigger me, me emotionally. And I think the main thing, I think a lot of people become triggered because they haven't done their own self-work. And if you haven't done your self-work to do your own healing, I would advise you against trying to help other people or take other people's stuff on because you don't have the capacity to, right? You can't pour from an empty cup. So again, your cup, so again, what does it mean to heal? So if you look at the etymology of the word heal, it comes from the word how, H-A-L. The word how comes from the word whole. The word whole comes from, derives from the word holy, spiritually pure, right? So again, if you have not done the work to heal, you are not whole, right? So again, if you are not healed, you do not have the capacity to be trying to help others. So again, so the main thing to do before you start trying to take on the weight of your students, their emotional trauma and all that, again, do your own work. And again, and then it'll be easier. It'll be a lot easier for you to walk away at the end of your day and be okay, right? But again, but I would encourage everybody, man, have a sacred space. Again, do something intentional on purpose, right, for yourself every day. And that could look like buying yourself a boba tea. It could look like spending an extra hour binge watching something when you get home, or binge watching it on your phone in your truck, or, you know, like just something for yourself, right? What does that look like? It's something that's good for your body. Like, don't go smoke a cigarette. That's not self-care. Or go be social or hang out with friends. Like what I did the other day is I woke up the other morning and I got online and I bought me an adult remote control car. When I tell you this thing, this car go like 20 miles per hour, and I be I'm on, you know, 2 acres of land, and I just be driving that little car all around my land, man. It's so fun.
And you're addressing your inner child as well.
Exactly. I told my wife, I said, I'm going to be the poster child for black men can have fun. Like, I bought me a PlayStation 4 like 6 months ago. You know, and I play Crash Bandicoot because that's what I used to play as a kid, right? I bought me a coloring book. I color at least once a week. I'm coloring. That calms me down. I'm a manly man, y'all. I love cutting my grass. I love taking care of these seven children of mine. I got a newborn in the house that's 6 weeks old. It's just a lot going on. So I got to do everything every day. I got to do something every day to take care of myself. Or I'm going to go crash out too. I'm going to be stressed out. You know? That's how I handle it, y'all. I'm intentional. Like, I am not back. Like my wife would tell you, I am not backed up or lacking in any way as it relates to self-care. Like, I think more bubble baths than her. I done took more bubble baths than my wife that she has in the last year than she has in the last five. I go get a haircut every week because it makes me feel good. So, yeah, I can go on and on. But, yes.
Wow. Well, Antonio, you know, you do. You definitely got the haircuts and the your self-care part on that end. Yeah. I think we all like, you know, the self-care because, especially for black people, we haven't been allowed, you know, just to be honest, when you look at it, we just haven't been allowed because we've been working literally sun up to sundown. And, you know, so we are learning, I think, as a community, we are learning that self-care piece is like, it's life or death.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
You are listening to Be Lifestyle Radio. I am your host, Letitia Dorsey Magaha, and your host, Antonio Magaha. If you want to call in, dial 516-453-9110. If you're in the chat, you can see the information for Get Up, Get Out, and Get Some Healing from Amazon. I don't know if it's a clickable link, but that is the latest book from our guest, Chris James, and he is with us. We're going to take a small musical break. Mr. James, can you go find that book so we can get those 8 levels of self-care sometime before the show is over?
Oh, yeah. So when we get back from this break, I have
it. All right. We will be right back with Chris James after the break.
So far. Yo, this is to every human that ever had the nerve to question their own existence. God told me to tell you that he designed you imperfect on purpose. It ain't nothing in your mirror you should question. Your flaws are beautiful, accept them. Don't listen to what them naysayers be telling. Tell them you ain't buying what they selling. What you already got is a top quality, an unvaluable commodity. Came straight from the source when you were born. You were pure gold when you popped from your mother's belly. Ain't nothing you need missing. You are extraordinarily exquisite. You perfect in that picture. You hang on the walls of hearts like art, no need to alter your image. For the rest of your days, be bold and resilient. In the toughest of times, rise from the ashes like a phoenix. Your presence is a present on Christmas. It's anticipated by many. They sit and wait on your arrival like children wait on Santa to come down the chimney. Your entrance into the room is grand. Nothing about you minuscule. You are well-rounded. No degrees missing. 360. Hold your head up high as if you were on a mission, because you are. You got a purpose and you are on purpose. Don't live life like you're an accident. You are fully insured, so rest assured that your greatness is already written in stone. I saw a man who was homeless and hungry, smiled from cheek to cheek. But in my opinion, he had two good reasons to complain. But his joy is a reminder that there is always a ray of sunshine somewhere. And just because you don't see it immediately, don't mean it ain't there. Sometimes you just gotta open your eyes, lean in, and look a little bit closer. There was beauty in the blemishes behind the borders of the basics in the background, like a background singer with just as much gift from God as the girls and guys in the front. And just because they shine bright, don't make your light dim. Stop comparing. You are not like them. And just because they got it doesn't mean you don't. You just gotta be patient. Maybe your miracle's marinating, your blessing is still baking, and you can't rush perfection. God is an artist, so respect his. You are a magnificent masterpiece made in the image of the Most High. With the faith of a mustard seed, you can move mountains. Now that's magic. You got powers. So why worry when you're the child of a warrior? Everything you ever desired is already inside your heart. There was no need for a Wizard of Oz. When all you got to do is open your eyes and realize that it's always been there the entire time.
Welcome back to The Lifestyle Radio. I am your host, Letitia Dorsey Magaha, and we are here with Chris James, award-winning poet, a mental health specialist, two-time TED Talk alumni, and the list goes on and on. Oh, the Black Chamber of Commerce for Atlanta member. That was one of his pieces, Perfectly Human. Thanks for being here again, Chris.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for having me. I was listening to that. I was like, man, where you find that at? That's a, I heard that in a long time. I need you to send me that. But thank you for sharing.
I have a question for you. Yes. I've listened to quite a few of your pieces. And my question for you right now is, was this what you always wanted to do? If someone would have asked you in seventh grade, what were you going to be doing as an adult? What would you have told them?
I would have told them I'd be writing. Yeah, so my dream in the seventh grade was to be a writer. Was to write for like a magazine but to be a writer. And I accomplished all of those goals. I started writing poetry in the seventh grade. Poetry turned into stage plays. Stage plays turned into movies. After I've been able to write, when I came to Atlanta in 2017, I was a full-time writer. I was a playwright. I toured my stage plays across the country, won all the awards, wrote screenplays, scripts, got a movie on BET, did all of that work. I actually started my own newspaper back in 2011.
Wow.
The Essence of Blackness, when I was back in Arkansas. Did that for a few years. So if you would ask me in seventh grade what I'd be doing, I would have told you I'd be writing. I did that, and
going. So who would you credit your determination, I guess? Who would you credit that to? Like, your parents? Who inspired you to follow your dreams?
I know it sounds cliche, but I guess what inspired me to, so I got two parts to that question. What inspired me to dream so hard was really that obvious scarcity, you know, that poverty, that lack of having. You know, so there was always this just deep desire to want more, which gave birth to so much of my ambition and me dreaming so hard. But as it relates to, you know, who inspired me to become a writer or introduced me to writing, it was my brother. My oldest brother, Rod. Both of my brothers, you know, they are in prison for 25 and 40 years. My oldest brother, Rod, they both went to prison the same year. It's been 17 years. I was 16, going on 17 when they both left and were incarcerated. But actually, my oldest brother, Rod, he used to write poetry. And I remember in the seventh grade, I found he had this cardboard file cabinet thing in his closet, and he had just like hella like loose leaf sheets of paper of poems that he wrote and notebooks, and I used to sneak and read them, and it made me want to write. And when I discovered poetry through my brother, I just fell in love with writing, man, and being able to just to write things that were on my mind and in my head, and I became a writer. And so that's who inspired it. And then who inspired it after that is my seventh grade teacher, Miss Murphy, who caught me writing and said it was good. And she told me in seventh grade, she said, you're going to be an orator. And I was like, what's that? An orator or whatever, you know. And I was like, I don't know what that is. Obviously, I still don't know what it is because I don't know how to say the word. But that's what she told me I was going to be. But basically somebody who speaks. And I remember Miss Murphy making me go down the hallway and read my poetry to Miss Woods and Miss Hadley, who was the math teacher, and she would make me read my poems to just everybody. And that was the first time, and that's where, you know, again, my brother inspired me to write. But my seventh grade science teacher, Miss Murphy, encouraged me to write.
That choked me up because working in education, I can see so much where people really discount the fact that you can really change a child's life by speaking into them, by encouraging them.
Yeah.
So,
this is true, I hope that more educators will remember that, or discover that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because again, what I would argue is that many educators have not discovered that they have a superpower,
mm-hmm.
right? Which is to truly transform young people into the best versions of themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
you know, because they just haven't discovered it. Because maybe they haven't had their own hero story, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe there was no Miss Murphy for them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now they're not it for anyone else. And then number two, the other side of it is some teachers were once upon a time that teacher, but have, you know, now they're burnt out, they don't really want to teach no more, You know, they tired. They're emotionally exhausted. So now they have divorced that superpower because of all those reasons. So I hope that, again, teachers will discover and rediscover that they have the ability to be a student superhero. Maybe not every student. Like, you ain't every student's cup of tea.
Right, that's right. But you somebody, but if you in there.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
One of the things I've noticed in education, too, just in the lines of what you were saying earlier, Chris, about doing the internal work before trying to assist, I you know, just kind of watching engagement from time to time. From the outside perspective, it appears like that a lot of these teachers, because they have maybe not started their healing journey or may not be aware that there's a need, they get triggered by a lot of these kids because they have the same, they suffer some of the same, you know, traumatic experiences, and they lash out. But out of the, you know, being unaware, it comes from a place of, you know, you're triggering me, so I'm lashing out. I don't know that I'm doing this, and I'm doing more damage than I am good. So I don't know. On some level, I would like to see, like, the some effort to come into the schools to really start hammering down and working with these teachers in that area and identifying what these traumas and triggers may be. Because I think a lot of the lack of classroom management and them being unable to be effective, it comes from that. A lot of them are just completely unaware. They are completely unaware.
Yeah. I mean, no, this is true. I mean, all of that is correct. Again, most of these teachers have not done the work to heal. You know,
right.
So again, so imagine somebody who has no idea how to manage their own emotions,
right.
Attempting to manage the emotions of 30 students a day 30 or 30
kids.
Students at a time. like it's impossible.
Yeah.
It's impossible,
right.
You know? So, yes, they're going to go off. Here's another example I want to use. Today, in the news, I posted it on my social media today. There was an African American woman who is in education, and it actually pissed me off to see it. What did I say? I said maybe I posted it yesterday, but I said protect your. Basically, I made a post and I said protect your children from devils. And I was mad about it. But there was an African-American teacher who was on the school bus with a special ed student, and she is seen on camera elbowing this special ed student. She's squeezing his leg. She's, like, slapping him in the face, like, not even aware that there is a camera on the school bus seeing everything she's doing. And now she's on the way to prison. Mm-hmm. But I say that to say that there are folks with degrees teaching our children who are completely mentally unstable themselves.
You don't have to tell us. You do not have to tell me.
We're very, very aware.
Very aware.
Right. My God.
Goodness.
I think that should be, you know, because we have so much, because educators, because I've also been and still do a lot of professional development in school.
Okay.
So I do get the opportunity to go and do cultural responsive teaching, professional development. I've done wellness professional development as well, but I don't do enough of that. I don't do enough of that. But that should, you know, more than the professional development around how you manage, how you are teaching a subject or any of that.
Right.
You should have more professional development around your wellness as an educator.
Yeah.
Your wellness.
Say that.
But also if we do more wellness trainings for educators and create just more wellness opportunities for who are our educators, they'll stay in education longer.
That's right. You know? That's right. That's right.
Well, instead of feeling the need to run to something else.
But I think that as having been in education for a while, in and out, right now the way that education looks like to me is sort of like a trap, because you know you in there and you stay in there, and then maybe 15 years in, you're like, okay, I'm wearing out. But that retirement says that you got to stay 15 more years. And there's no mental health accommodate. I mean, you know, they'll give you the number to 5-3 sessions somewhere, but we don't take care of our educators in the way that they need. And now, because there's such a shortage of teachers and people to work in education, it's everybody, anybody. You can come in, hey, here, long as you pass the fingerprint test, you do the fingerprint, we don't care, just as long as it's a warm body in the building. And we're not going to say that, really, but that's really what's happening. That's really what's happening.
Yeah.
And these people, they don't, their mental health, the things over the years, and not just where I am now, but over the years, I know Antonio mentioned, I think it was one show, we have heard in the past, heard a person tell a student, your mama should have swallowed you. What is that to say to a kid?
Yeah.
You should have been a throat baby. What is that to say to a child?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so all this trauma, it is pure evil. And, you know, these parents are entrusting the children with us. And sometimes I'm like, if y'all only knew what was happening on this side of the door, you'd be upset.
How do you guys think that this is the question I've been having for a minute. We talk about this, you and I, Tish. Like, even for teachers who have children, the compartmentalization, it's like, you know, if your child, your daughter, son came home and said that your teacher said that to you, you would go up and burn the school down and everybody in it. You know what I mean? But it's like there's a complete disconnect from you being able to look at that child as a human being first and foremost. But to be able to say something like that is like, how do you disconnect that from, you know, you being a child, I mean, being a parent, and you know how you would feel, but you don't take into account that, like, that's somebody's child. That's a human. Where is the disconnect? How does that become a point of disconnection? I that's puzzling to me. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll get it either. I don't get it either. I mean, it's very weird.
Post-slavery. You know, post-slavery trauma, to me, that's where it comes from.
Yeah, I can agree with that,
yeah.
Man. But, you know, but again, to that point, I would definitely be at the school having a conversation, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nobody would be able to stand in the way of it. It's happening.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm one of those real involved parents, like, hey, so
real
y'all gotta see
involved.
Me. So, yeah.
But, you know, for the parents who, you know, because there are all kind of parents, you know, parents who, you got single mothers who, you got to get on the bus because I'm going to work. And by the time, you know, and there's a lot of judgment, you know, you don't know people's situations. You don't know why this parent can't come and these parents can't be here or this. It's so much trauma around education to me. And I remember years ago, I remember thinking the same people who've been traumatized in school and don't really make that connection, they avoid the school because it brings up, it's just a trigger. So the place where you've been traumatized, the teacher told you you wasn't going to be nothing. I had a student say to me recently, like, and this is their interpretation, because maybe the teacher didn't say it this way, but this is what they took away from what was said, that Y'all are just going to fail. Y'all are failures. Y'all are failures. Mm. Everybody's failing, and y'all are failures. Now, the teacher may not have said it like that, but that's the way that they, that's what they took away. So that's all that matters is what they got. And so the student kept repeating it, and it just said, I was going to be a failure. I'm a failure. And I was like, you're not a failure. You're not failure. You're not a failure. But if you were the parent of a student, the parent, when you were a student, you were being traumatized at school, you're going to be very hesitant mm-hmm. to come to the school. You may not know why, but you don't show up. And so then inside the school, they're like, oh, so-and-so, they don't never show up. They don't never come, blah, blah, blah. But how do you know why? You don't even know why.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, then there's the element of – I'm sorry, go ahead, Chris. I'll cut you off.
No. Please, go for it.
No. Go ahead. I'll cut you off. Go ahead.
Well, what I was just going to say quickly is that a lot of parents, they don't know how to advocate for themselves in a healthy way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't know how to go have a healthy conversation for their children in a way that protects their children,
mm-hmm.
in a way that contributes to a better situation for their children,
mm-hmm.
But again, also a lot of people just don't know how to deal with conflict. You know, it's uncomfortable. It's
right.
It's awkward. It's weird. You know, we
mm-hmm.
don't know
right.
the language in which to use when dealing with conflict. You know, most of us
mm-hmm.
have been mad at people we love for 10 years about a thing that is really simple to talk about, but because it's conflict, we don't want to address it, you know. And because
mm-hmm.
of that, our children often get the short end of the stick.
That's
mm-hmm.
right.
Mm-hmm.
There's an element, too, even piggyback off of what you're saying. I've seen of intimidation. Especially when it
mm-hmm.
comes to some of the areas and demographics that we deal with. Like, you know, if a parent is not necessarily highly educated, or maybe they, dropped out in the fourth or fifth grade, and you come to school and I'm sitting down and having a meeting, and you're throwing all these acronyms at me, and you're throwing all this terminology at me, and I'm sitting there like, what in the world are you talking about? You know, and you're in a room full of people that's doing all this. The likelihood of me coming back to advocate or try to have a meeting is probably slim to none, because I have no idea what you're talking about. And then, the lack or the neglect on behalf of the educators to explain what's going on, like, that puts the parent in a bad space. So you're right. Like, being able to be a strong advocate is like, I'm not going back up there for that. You know what I mean? I'll stay back and try to support as much as I can from afar. But there's a lot of intimidation that goes, goes hand in hand with that when it comes to, being an advocate. A lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I dig it. I agree.
Yeah.
All right. You are listening to Be Lifestyle Radio. I just want to thank the our listeners who are out there listening. If you are listening and you want to join in, you have a question for Mr. James, a question for myself or Antonio, please push the 1 and right so I can see to patch you in. But I appreciate everyone who is listening right now. I hope you are getting something good. I am going to go to another small break because it's 10:15, and you, Chris, I told you this thing goes by fast. It goes by super fast. The conversation, especially when the conversation is good like this, and mental health. I mean, we could talk about mental health every day, because according to the statistics, people aren't getting the mental health they need. But when we come back from our break, I have a question for you, and I want you to, before we get off, I want you to give us those, 8 levels of self-care, but I have a question I want you to think about while we take this little short break. I want you to think about the 3 most important issues in the Black community and your idea of how to solve them.
Okay.
And about 4 minutes, we'll be right back. Again, if you have a question, I see a hand up. Let's see. Area code 337. Hi, how are you? Welcome to Be Lifestyle Radio.
Hey, Miss Double Chocolate.
What's going on? Did you have a question for us? Who? What's your name, caller?
Miss Double Chocolate.
Hey, Ross, how are you? Thank you for joining us. We are talking about mental health tonight. Thanks for joining us. This is one of the Hilltop Off. She, how many shows you, how many radio shows you have Sunday night?
Love After Dark on Sunday night.
Love After Dark on Sundays. And don't you have another radio show that y'all are getting on or putting on?
I mean, DJ Sean will be working on something a little bit later. But for right now, it's just our shows.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for calling in. And we are going to take a little small break, and we'll be right back with Mr. James.
More than 11,000 Arkansans have died as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. Today, in acknowledgement of this tremendous loss and our many other shared traumas of the past 2 years, we observe a day of reflection and healing at the request of the Arkansas Center for Health Improvement. I wrote the following poem for this day. In 2020, when I stepped outside my door, it felt like an apocalypse was being commenced. I admit I was scared to live in what seemed to be a season of the walking dead. I wasn't sure what was to happen next, so I watched for updates on the news that only left me more confused. I wanted to go outside and enjoy the weather, walk nature trails and play with my children at the park, but the gates were locked and yellow tape was wrapped around the monkey bars and the swings like it was a crime scene. When I stepped outside my door, life as I thought it was ain't what it seemed. The world was at a standstill. Was even told I had to pause my dreams. It was supposed to be spring, but I recall how even the flowers blossomed less and how I was forced to be distracted by the world less and spend actual time with my own self in silence. But the self-reflection was loud. Anxiety was an orchestra in my mind, and depression was a drumline on my heartbeat. Then would you believe that summer came and it rained even more, when news outlets and social media kept showing on repeat the lifeless corpse of George Floyd. I stood outside the Capitol doors to do what most would call a protest, but like many, I was only there to mourn. The next morning, I cried and I couldn't answer why. The pandemic forced me to feel, showed me how the trauma was real, and I couldn't hide the hurt behind a mask, and a vaccine wouldn't fix it. Now it's 2 years later, and I can still see the debris. I try not to stare, but we all know it. She ain't as beautiful as she used to be. They say the pandemic was abusive, permanently blacked her eye and crooked up her smile. But who am I to judge her, the world? Because we ain't the same either. I guess this perceived ugly is all of our new normal, and that she is still working to heal, it only makes sense that we do the same. So in the meantime, I think it's relevant that we all know, you got a lot to smile for, you got a lot to live for, you got a lot to do, so you can't give up now. You got a lot to smile for, you got a lot to live for, you got a lot to do, so you can't give up now.
Welcome back to Be Lifestyle Radio. I am your host, Letitia Dorsey Magaha and Antonio Magaha. We are here with Chris James. All I can say is I am in awe, right? Before we get to my questions for you and your, like, mental health, poetry, music, obviously here. Do you have an album?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely do.
You have a music album. Okay, what's the music album?
It's a spoken word album, and it's some music on it because I do sing and I sing a little bit, you know. So yeah, you can check that album out. I mean, if you put it into your Apple Music, the Chris James Journey, or if you Google the Chris James Journey, you can find some of that music and poetry on SoundCloud, on Bandcamp, and again Apple Music. So I do have an album out there. I'm actually about to begin recording my second album. It'll be a spoken word album, but it'll have, you know, music accompanying every track, but also some songs on that project as well. That project will be called When Black Boys Mamas Die.
That's deep. That's
deep. Oh, yeah. Real deep.
I when I was listening and researching and, you know, Googling you, and I heard that, I was like, okay, with the Molly music sounding, Junie sounding, neo soul, I love it. I love it. We love music over here. My Antonio, singer-songwriter, hey, music speaks to the soul when the words don't.
Well, I appreciate you for playing that. Again, you playing stuff I ain't heard in a while. So I appreciate you for pulling it out of the hat, you know. So thank you.
All right. So I think I want to – what do you think – let's reduce it because I said three. What do you think the most important issue – in the Black community is right now, and what's your idea on how to solve it?
So one of the most important issues that I personally, have conversations about very often is Black people and healthy relationships. So something I think would contribute to the solving of a lot of our issues in the Black community. The Black community is severely divided in a lot of ways, you know, economically, relationally, family-wise. It's just so many different divides. We can just go down the line on those divides. But it all roots back to, again, the inability to be in healthy relationships because of all the trauma that has affected us and that has divided us.
Mm-hmm.
So something that I heavily preach, I made a post the other day. I said Black men should be focusing on three things, and I'm going to my Instagram so I can read what I posted. Black men should focus on these three things. Number one, healing from past relationships and childhood trauma. Number two, deciding what happiness looks like for you and how you like to naturally serve those around you. And then number three, find a woman who desires to be a wife, marry her, and build with her. And that right there, it really brings me to my point. I think, you know, when you look at what was happening, when you look at when Black people, right, were most great collectively, you look at the 1920s. You know, in the 1920s.
I love the 20s.
Or let's just say the early 1900s, right? Like, if you got friends right now who got 20 acres, 50 acres, or if you know any black folks who got 20 acres, 50 acres, or whatever, and it was passed down to them, their family most likely acquired it in the very early 1900s, because that's mm-hmm. when we were thriving financially. That's when mm-hmm. we had the most black businesses. That's when we had Black Wall Street, not only in Tulsa, mm-hmm. Oklahoma, but all around America, we had Black Wall Street. We had a Black Wall mm-hmm. Street in Little Rock, Arkansas. We had a Black Wall Street we had a Black Wall Street everywhere, right?
Right.
You know, we talk about Tulsa's Black Wall Street because it was a part of the Red Summer. You know, it was a bloody mm-hmm. massacre. It was you know. But we had those everywhere. But I bring that particular example up as it relates to those thriving businesses in the 1920s, because again, keep in mind, again, thriving businesses, thriving grocery stores and movie theaters and pool halls and grocery mm-hmm. stores and gas stations, all in black communities owned by black folks. Those thriving communities and businesses were not thriving with single black folks, right? Mm-hmm. Those were black families, husband and wives who owned those businesses, who sustained those businesses. And then
right.
though there were black families that were patronizing those black businesses, those mechanic shops, those grocery stores, those clothing shops, right? So mm-hmm. again, if I think the biggest way we can solve a lot of our issues economically, family-wise, and just all the ways, right, is if we teach men and women, black men and women, the importance of being in healthy, happy, whole relationships
yep.
with other black folks, right, with mm-hmm. each other, right,
mm-hmm.
and we encourage them to be married, to be in matrimony, to the importance of a covenant and how to do it successfully and how to stay in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm the happiest and the healthiest and the wealthiest in all the ways I've ever been. I'm in the best position I've ever been in because I am a husband, because I have mm-hmm. a black wife, mm-hmm. and because I have a black yep. wife who also done the work individually to do her work before me, and I did my work before her, right? And now and we're still doing work together as it relates to our healing journey, right? Now we're able to thrive way mm-hmm. more. Now we're able to serve others way more efficiently, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, we're doing this thing together. So, again, that's what I would that's my advocacy. That's what I'm standing on top of the mountain yelling. Black men, grab you a black woman, marry her,
mm-hmm.
build with her,
yep.
you know, roll with her, right? And I'm yelling that to black women too. Black women,
mm-hmm.
black men, stop believing this lie that we're at war,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
anybody who says
right.
that there's a war also, between men and women, stop saying it. Because the more you
mm-hmm.
say that it's a war happening between
mm-hmm.
men and women, the more you contribute to it being a war. And so,
mm-hmm.
so again, it's not a war. Don't give it credence, because if
mm-hmm.
you keep saying that
right.
it's a war, then it'll continue to be a war. I'm
right.
saying to everybody, it ain't no war. That's not even real. That's an illusion. Get out the matrix. Unplug
mm-hmm.
from that lie.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
get you a black woman, get you a black man, so we can build, so we can get back to thriving the way we were in the early 1900s, in all
right.
the ways.
Mm.
But yeah, so that's my short talk on what we need to do. That's what we need to focus on. Like, and I wanted to, black men
mm-hmm.
are so black men always focus on career. Like, black men,
mm-hmm.
I want you to know this, you are way more valuable than what your bank account says. You're way more valuable than that. black men, you are experiencing so much burnout, so much depression, so much emotional and physical exhaustion because you have not learned that your value is not in your wallet. And because you have not learned that, you are not able to articulate that to the women that you are experiencing, so they continue with that same rhetoric too, thinking that your value is in your wallet. So, men, once you learn and master and understand that your value is beyond your wallet, you can teach that to women, and they will believe it and love you and keep you in their lives because of more than what you offer financially, right? And because men continue to follow suit with that lie that their value is in their wallet, they're becoming emotionally exhausted because they're always chasing the bag. Men, you can be an amazing man making $40,000, $50,000, $60,000. We will kill ourselves. I mean, literally. Men, you will kill yourself trying to chase the lie that you need to be a six-figure earner. You do not need to be that. What you need to be is a visionary for your family. And if you are a visionary for your family, then you can articulate what the vision is for your family and how we're going to accomplish that. So you can tell your wife, baby, you make 30, I make 50, so we make 80. All the, like my family, me and my wife, all our money go in one bank account. So if I make 30 this year and she makes 70, or if I make 50 and she makes 50, it's 100 in the account. And as the visionary, as the head of my house, as the steward of my land and my family, we making moves like this. This is what we're going to do to grow our family. This is what we are going to do to grow our finances. This is what we are going to do to make sure our mortgage is paid. This is what we are So men, again, I really want to talk about women too. Like, the come up is getting with somebody and doing it together. Just put your coins together.
Right.
Stop trying to keep your money there and your money there. Put that money together and watch how good it looks. Stop, you know, we got to stop. And the issue is too many of us are operating from a space of scarcity. So everybody thinks that they got something to lose. You ain't got nothing to lose, but you got everything to gain. You got everything to gain. Again, it's so the way we go win, y'all, is through full togetherness. Like, get with somebody and trust them with everything in you. Like, give it all. Again, the biggest financial come up you can have, men, women, is doing it together. Put all your money together. Marry you somebody and put it all together. And I promise you, you're going to win. Have a common goal. What we doing? How we going to do it? Why we doing it? Men, I'm calling on the men because, again, be leaderful enough to make it clear about what we doing, why we doing it, and how we doing it. All right? That's the come up. Not try to work five more jobs so you can make six figures. You with a woman, and y'all, your house makes six figures. Right? Research says that in order to reach economic wealth in America, your family has to make $150,000 per year for 3 years consecutively. And it also said that most American families ain't doing that. So, again, if you and your partner can get together and put it together, you can get closer to that, and you can start acquiring some wealth and start acquiring some assets. But you're probably not going to do it by yourself. And that's just the reality. So that's the come up. That's how we gonna get this where we try to go.
Did you inherit that mindset, or did you learn? Did you have to teach yourself that? How did you get to where you are able to see it like that? Your parents?
Nah, definitely not my parents. You know, my parents were not together. Mom raised us by herself. But I just got it from, you know, picking up chairs, you know, just kind of seeing success stories from different individuals, you know, just throughout my life. And I've always been a sponge. I've always soaked up information right? I saw people doing it, so I did it. I always tell people I'm a good copycat. You know, we all a copycat. It just matters what cats you copy it, right? Mm. You know, so I've been amazing at copying the cats who win it. And, yeah, so I've adopted these things, I guess. So, like, for example, like, and I tell this to the men, any man that I mentor or coach or any boy that I coach or mentor, I always tell them, I say, yo, every one of us are versions of a whole lot of things that we've mimicked, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we all are. Like Antonio, you are. Leticia, you are. Like,
yep.
You are. Mm-hmm. You just a. We just, all of us are just a collection of behaviors and attitudes and things that we've seen other people do. Rather,
yep.
We saw something on TV when we were 12 and it became a part of our personality. We mm-hmm. saw our daddy,
right.
Or our mom, our uncle do this and it became a part. And then we just became a thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So what I tell people, when you know better, you do better. So now that you know, so because most of the ways that we've become it have been by accident.
Mm-hmm.
But now,
mm-hmm.
right, we can become certain things on purpose, right? So for me, one of the things that I've done about as it relates to my marriage, right, like I'm a copycat as it relates to my best friend, Ron Matt, the way him and his wife operate. They've been married 20-plus years now is, again, they put all the money. They're both school teachers. They're both school teachers, 20-plus years school teachers. And when I tell you they're one of the most well-off families I know, but they put it all in one account. So when I got married,
mm-hmm.
I copied that model because it works.
Because mm-hmm.
I've seen it
mm-hmm.
work. I've seen them. I mean, they are living amazingly. So that's just one example of how I'm a good copycat.
Hold on, we getting some, I guess it's storming outside and lightning. She might have gotten disconnected. Hold on a second, hold on.
Okay, yeah, because my lights and everything cut out too.
It may be a second before she gets reconnected, Chris.
I'm gonna keep talking.
Yeah, but she said you can keep. Right. Yeah. Mm.
Okay.
You're a good copycat, and you were talking about your friend and just kind of following.
I was actually done with my point, but what I will
okay.
say again. Is again copycat, all right? Copy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, what I would encourage people to do is to look at people who are doing it well, who are doing it
right.
in a healthy way, and copy
mm-hmm.
it. It's okay. It's okay
mm-hmm.
to be a copycat. Like, if you got a friend or somebody that you see who's doing it the right way,
right.
follow them, copy it. You know,
yeah.
you know. Add that to your toolbox. So that's what I give to you all. And then side note, I want to say I hope, man, this eclipse ain't causing no issues right now because when she had her technical issue, my lights went out too, and I'm like, hold on, what's
yeah,
going on?
Yeah, they were flashing here for a second. Yeah, and I can hear the wind blowing pretty heavily, and I heard some sirens a few seconds ago. So I'm not sure. I didn't even know it was supposed to be storming and raining today or this evening. So hopefully, everything will get back on track. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I definitely no. I really appreciate your perspective, man. We have me and a couple of good friends of mine. We just started a podcast called the HEAL Podcast. HEAL, the acronym HEAL standing for, what is that? I'm sorry. Hold on a second, Chris. Hold on. my apologies, our entertainment system, I guess it shut off when the power went off and came back on, so it was really loud, and I didn't want to blast all over the speakers. But we just started a podcast called the HEAL Podcast, HEAL standing for the acronym HEAL standing for healing, empowering, accountability, and loving yourself, man. And it's basically a spinoff from a men's group that we do the first and third Mondays called Mandatory Adjustment. And everything that we're talking about, man, is some of the topics and conversations that we have. So we would love at some point soon, man, to have you on and continue some of this conversation because it's such a need. And I'm finding more and more, and it's a good thing that more and more, you know, black men are starting to open up and be vulnerable and are looking for the opportunity for healing. You know what I mean? I think we're definitely headed just as a collective in a very good direction as far as that's concerned, man. But like I said, we would love, you know, when you're convenient and when time permits to have you on, you know, on that podcast. That would be great. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I would love to. Again, I mean, like I said, man, black men and black boys are my, you know, they're my main, you know, focus, you know, as it relates to the work that I do in the mental health space. So, yeah, man, let's definitely make it happen.
Okay, for sure.
I think I'm back. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you are. We hear you now.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. I don't know what is going on here, but all is well. So last 15 minutes, I wanted to, of course, get those self-care tips, but I see that you offer certification in youth mental health first aid training.
Yes.
You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So a lot of folks don't know about mental health first aid. So, again, I am a youth mental health first aid instructor, meaning I provide a training for anybody who is 18 or older. So, again, if you are a parent, an educator, a mentor, if you work in an after-school program, if you work with teenagers, young people in any capacity, I provide a training that teaches you how to respond to the mental health struggles of students. Primarily, we really focus on, in this certification training, teaching adults how to respond to a student who may be dealing with, who may be exhibiting behaviors of suicide ideation or a crisis that could escalate to a suicide. Again, we provide a certification through the National Council of Mental Wellbeing. That this is a 3-year certification. The training, I provide my next training on May 24th. It is a full-day training. We go from 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time to 4 p.m. And once you finish the course with me, you take a short post-test. Once you pass that test, you will receive a certification. So it's an amazing training to be a part of. We always tell folks that if Michelle Obama did the work to become certified, you should too.
So tell our listeners where this is located, May the 24th.
So the training is provided virtually. So you can do it from your home or your desktop. You know, so again, on your desktop, you need to be on your desktop so you can participate in all the activities because it is a really hands-on training that we'll be doing. But if you want to register, you can go to my website or my organization's website, which is ourcreativeconnections.com. Again, that's ourcreativeconnections.com. You can also check me out on social media at Chris James Journey. I'm Chris James, and I'm on a journey. Please, I May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and what are you going to do about it? Don't just make a post. Come over here and do some training. It's certified, you know, because it can truly, I mean, literally save somebody's life. My TED Talk, if you put in your YouTube search, Chris James TED Talk, my latest TED Talk was how everyday, it was titled, How Everyday People Can Prevent Suicide, How Everyday People Can Prevent a Mental Health Crisis Such as Suicide. And one of the main things I talk about is doing the work to become certified as a mental health first aider. Because, again, you learn the language. Because again, most people, if a young person comes to your classroom or if your child comes home and you realize that they are cutting themselves, you know, on their thigh where you can't see it, or they're taking prescription drugs that are not their own, or, you know, or whatever. They're doing things that are, you know, showing signs of suicide. Again, do you know how to properly respond to that, right? Most parents or teachers might panic or, you know, just do the worst things and it will escalate the situation.
Escalate the situation. And I can attest to that because I can attest to that. And I've told young people that, you know, parents don't know everything. And so when they respond, it's out of fear. You know, when they don't respond in a way that you think, well, the way that's not helpful, it's because the parents are afraid. They are afraid and have no idea what to do. You know, we got 12 minutes, and I'm going to have to ask you to come back and do a part two because this is just so good. And so sometime in the future, can I get you to come back? Because suicide alone, suicide ideation in young people alone is something that we don't talk about enough in our community.
Yeah, I
was a cutter. I don't even know. I don't know if my parents knew or they didn't know. I have no idea. But it is only by the grace of God that I'm alive. And without the proper mental health help as a young person, that I definitely need it. So that subject alone, I really would like to talk about, so to get the word out.
I would love to have that conversation. I mean, you sharing your story as a young person, I think it's necessary. And I would love the opportunity to, you know, to dig deeper into that, right? You know, I would love to learn more about, like, what you did to get through that, you know, and what that experience was like for you as a youth, right? Because we don't really get to hear that perspective, right? Especially somebody who dealt with self-harm themselves. You know, so I would love to dive deeper. I would definitely, you know, be open to coming back to and having more conversation around this topic. So, yeah.
Okay, awesome. So, can you give us the quick and dirty 8 levels of self-care?
Yeah. Let me, I got the book right here. Let me, you can grab the book from Amazon or you can go to my website, thechrisjamesjourney.com. Again, that's thechrisjamesjourney.com. You can grab the book right there. The 8 levels of self-care. You got physical self-care, you know, which is encompasses your sleep, stretching, walking, physical release, eating healthy food, yoga, rest. Boom. You got emotional self-care, which is stress management, practicing emotional maturity, practicing forgiveness, right? Practicing kindness. And then you have social self-care, creating boundaries, support systems, positive social media, communication, spending time together, asking for help. And then you got spiritual self-care, which is spending time alone, meditation, yoga, connection to nature. Go put your feet in the dirt. Go touch it. Go touch some flowers. I got a garden. I got two garden beds in my front yard, and I got a garden bed of vegetables in my backyard. Right, I'm touching the dirt, y'all. So that's my spiritual self-care. Journaling, and then I spoke of earlier, a sacred space, right? And then the fifth level of self-care is personal self-care. Again, doing more hobbies. Again, the other day I bought me a remote control car. I bought a coloring book. I bought a PlayStation. Hobbies, doing things, doing more things towards knowing yourself. Most of us don't know ourselves. So do more things to know yourself. You know, I bought the Jordan Peele book a few months ago. Well, in October I bought it during Halloween season. The book is called Out There Screaming, and it's a book of horror stories by black writers. And reading that book, I rediscovered what was fun for me as a reader. It ain't reading all these smart books. I enjoy reading a book that was fun. So doing things towards knowing yourself better. That's personal self-care, all right? And then honoring your true self, right? Not the performance self, right? The sixth level of self-care, again, is space self-care, creating safe spaces for yourself, healthy living environments, right? Security and stability, and then organized space. And then number six is financial self-care, saving money, budgeting money management, splurging every now and then on yourself. And splurging don't mean spending thousands of dollars. It can mean going to the dollar store and spending $50 on things just for yourself. That's splurging, you know. Or it could just be, you know, going to the restaurant and getting the appetizer this time because you used to only get entrees because you're cheap, you know. Like splurge, right? So then paying your bills. You feel good when you pay that bill. Don't wait till the day before it's supposed to get cut off. Pay it on time, pay it early, because you feel good about it no longer being hanging over your head. And then the last thing, the eighth level of self-care is work self-care. All right, time management, work boundaries, turning off the computer, not taking calls after 5 o'clock or whatever time, having a positive workplace. Like at work, I'm not participating in no negative conversation. Like, did you see what so-and-so said? I ain't even paying attention to that. But I'm going to holler at you in a minute, though. Like, hurrying up and getting away from the negative. All right, work boundaries, positive workplace, more learning that feels good for you, and then break time. Take a break. Do not, again, I don't believe that nobody should be working over 8 hours a day. I believe everybody should work 4 quality hours a day. And after 4 hours, you ain't giving no quality work. You just not.
Right.
Like, we ain't designed to be working all day. We designed to be having fun and doing things that are spiritually fulfilling to our humanity. So that's the 8 levels of self-care, y'all.
Wow. This was an amazing, amazing time. Chris James, we thank you. Can you tell our listeners where they can, your different social media handles and how they can find you?
Yes, Chris James Journey, all right, is my social media. Chris James Journey, and that's my website, that's my Facebook, that's the Instagram, Chris James Journey. That's also how you can find my SoundCloud, my projects on Apple Music, all that good stuff. Again, Chris James Journey. And if you want to participate in the Mental Health First Aid training, visit OurCreativeConnections.com. Again, that's OurCreativeConnections.com.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Antonio, do you want to let the people know where they can find you and your mandatory adjustment?
Yes. Instagram, Antonio's Music. Facebook, Antonio.Magaha. Website, Antonio'sMusic.com. The new Peel podcast, the Heal podcast. On YouTube, and if anybody's interested in on the first and third Monday and being part of a non-judgmental safe space for men, talk about men's issues related to mental health, physical health, or anything else related to men, make sure you DM me on Instagram at Mandatory Adjustments 2024.
Again, that's Mandatory Justice 2024. That's first and third Mondays at 7 p.m. via Zoom.
Awesome. And I am Latricia Dorsey Magaha. You can find me at becomingexcellentb.com on all social media platforms. If you're just looking to reach out to get some positivity, to do some life coaching, career coaching, just advising, give me a shout out, and I am available. There is so much mental health available for us now, and the barriers are coming down, and I'm so excited about it. So much, so many resources. The internet has provided a lot of, you know, people can get overwhelmed with the information, but at least it's out there now. It's not being gatekept. So, again, thank you so much, Chris James, for coming out with your new baby. Congratulations on your new baby, Ezekiel,
congrats,
right?
Congrats.
Yes.
And tell your wife we thank you for letting us borrow you for this time period.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure. Thank you all for having me, for sure.
All right, and we will be having you again.
I look forward to it.
All right, and we are signing off. Valley Music.
Peace.
Peace.